Sometimes, the best stories in golf aren't found on tour. You'll find them at the back of the range. And here's your host, Ben Adelberg.
And welcome to the back of the range. I am your host, Ben Adelberg. This is episode 335. As you all are well aware, the craziness of the spring collegiate golf season is picking up steam, and the postseason is just around the corner. So the podcast episodes are being put together on the fly, edited and recorded in hotel rooms. Yes, I'm a Hilton guy, and my diamond status is nothing to be trifled with. So I'm going to do the best I can to get more episodes out before the end of the collegiate season. This week, I'm in the state of Georgia. I kick things off in Sea Island for the Johnny O Collegiate, hosted by Rutgers University. Coach Rob Schutte and his entire team, not just the players, but his entire army of Rutgers volunteers, put on an incredible tournament. Special thanks to him, Johnny O, Southern Soul Barbecue, and everyone at Sea Island Golf Club for a great time. The Fighting Irish walked away with the team title and the individual titles. Jacob Modleski, the freshman from Notre Dame, closed with a 65 on the final day to share medalist honors with Ashton McCulloch from Michigan State. And by the way, Ashton fired the low round of the tournament in the second round with a 62. Incredible stuff. Max Lyons from Marquette made a hole-in-one on a par 4. You know, I've said it before, if you're a little frustrated with the pro game right now, go to a college golf tournament. You will see the same level of play as you do on the pro tours. If you don't know where to find the best college golf tournaments, go to golfstat.com or shoot me an email. I'll point you in the right direction. Ben@thebackoftherange.com. So I mentioned I'm in Georgia. Well, the final touches of this episode were actually put together in Statesboro. I'm here for a couple days checking out the Schenkel Invitational hosted by Georgia Southern University. I heard a lot of great things about this tournament, how the whole city gets behind it, and after witnessing their junior clinic the day before the practice round, which had about, 200 kids, I think I can see why everyone is so passionate about this tournament. So I'll be here for a couple days before heading over to Eatonton, Georgia for the Linger Longer Invitational at Reynolds Lake Oconee. This will be my third consecutive year at the Linger Longer. It's hosted by Georgia, Mercer, and Kennesaw State University. Fantastic field heading to the lake, Georgia, Virginia, Georgia Tech, just to name a few. As always, make sure you're following along on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know where to find all the content. Also, check out Linger Longer Invitational on Instagram this week. I'll be putting some content up there. And as always, for all previous episodes of the podcast, go to thebackoftherange.com. Now, my guest on this episode of The Back of the Range is Coach Brian Odom from Kennesaw State University. Coach Odom played for Coach Hack at Georgia, where he was a four-year letter winner at Georgia. He won the SEC Individual Championship in 2001. He was also part of that 1999 Bulldog squad that won the national championship. We spoke about his playing days, what got him into coaching, and why this year's team might just be his favorite that he's ever coached. Before getting to Coach Odom, since we're all going to be guests out there on the lake, I thought it would make sense to include a bonus guest to this episode, Wes Forrester, the director of golf at Reynolds Lake Oconee. He's seen every single one of the Linger Longer Invitationals, so I wanted to get his take on the Great Waters golf course and why it's the perfect fit for college golf, and what everyone can expect to see at this year's tournament. We're getting ready to start this Linger Longer, and I don't think I can remember ever a time when you have a collegiate event that won't have their defending champion in the field, not because they've graduated, but because they've won on the PGA Tour as an amateur, and they've left school. Did you ever see that coming at all? And, of course, we're talking about Nick Dunlap.
Correct.
Did you ever see something like that happening?
To be honest, no, not exactly. I mean, you watch these collegiate players, and you're enamored. And maybe that's the wrong word. You're in awe of the way they can play and the competition that they're playing at this level. So I guess you always knew it was possible. But then to watch Nick come down, you know, down the stretch, everyone basically saying it's his first time around, you know, most likely he's going to stumble or do something, and to watch him play and to watch him win that tournament, you know, I guess in a small way, I'd like to believe Lingerlanger helped him get there. So, yeah, I always knew it was, I always felt like it was possible, but you always felt like, you know, these guys on the PGA Tour are pretty good. You know, it's not going to be as easy as you think. You know, watching Nick and watching him play and win the event when everyone was kind of saying, ah, you know, he's not used to this environment. Maybe Lingerlanger had a little bit to do that with helping him through it.
The platform that college golf and amateur golf provides to these young players, of course, everyone has a part in getting them to that level of comfort in high-pressure competition situations. I mean, just a few days ago, Jackson Van Paris from Vanderbilt, who participated in the Lingerlanger last year, I think the last 2 years.
Last 2 years.
Yeah. He just shot 64 in the final round of the Puerto Rico Open and finished a top 10 in his first PGA Tour event. So these kids are coming fast. Let's talk a little bit about Great Waters. First of all, let's embarrass you a little bit. You're the 2021 Georgia PGA Section Golf Professional of the Year. And I think that may have something to do with the fact that you manage all six golf courses at Reynolds. Do you sleep at all? Is that part of your job?
It's optional. It's not required. Yeah, I've been very lucky. I started 18 years ago, so the very first year the Lingerlanger was played, my very first year at Reynolds. I've only been the director of golf the last 7 years. I spent most of my time at the Creek Club, which is our member-only facility, but a little time at the Landing, a little time at the Preserve. Yeah, very lucky. Very lucky to where we are. Very lucky that Lingerlanger has continued to thrive in this environment. So we know we're only a couple of days away. I know our team is very excited, so we look forward to it.
What's the biggest task for you? I know you have a lot of different golf courses, a lot of people coming from all over the world to visit Reynolds Lake Oconee and play golf and really just unwind. I mean, I think that's kind of the feeling everyone gets at this tournament, whether it's parents, players, coaches, everyone can just kind of take a breath a little bit and enjoy the lake and enjoy the amenities. What's the biggest challenge? I don't want to say challenge, but what's the biggest part of your job to get ready for some of the best collegiate players in the country?
Well, a lot of it is coordinating the different aspects of our volunteers. And I say that only because, unlike a lot of college tournaments, our membership and our community embrace the collegiates and their teams into our environments. And they don't stay in hotels or cottages or hotel rooms. They stay with them at their houses. And so the thing that I've heard from coaches and from players is how much they enjoy getting to know our membership. So coordinating that and getting them and making sure we've got our families in place. And if we don't have some, because they're going to be away working with that. But yeah, it's all the planning that goes into it, which is also the fun part. It may be a challenge from time to time, but when you talk about, you know, the meals and, you know, we really can't do much about the weather, but I'm sure agronomically coming out of a winter, and this winter happens to be just a hair bit colder, you know, than usual. So getting the golf course out of dormancy. But really, it's all the little details that go into getting ready for this event that will start on Saturday with our college am.
I know the Great Waters is a Jack Nicklaus design. You know, the Nationals, it's a Fazio. I know you have a lot of different looks, so to speak, at Lake Oconee with different golf courses. What do you think, in your opinion, makes Great Waters so perfect for college golf?
Oh, I mean, it starts with Jack and his design. I shouldn't say Jack. It's not like I know Mr. Nicklaus very well, but you know, to make it sound like I've met him before just a couple of times, but it is. I mean, we had the Anderson Consulting World Match Play in the 90s when it first opened. I think that opened up not only the Reynolds brand to golf in Georgia. I mean, we're halfway between Augusta and Atlanta. We weren't necessarily known at that time for golf. But Mr. Nicklaus coming in and designing a golf course, 9 of the last holes have lake features. In fact, I used to hear the Reynolds family say, for years, they might have given Mr. Nicklaus a little bit too much lakefront property that they could have sold for real estate. But when you start doing those last 9 to 10 holes on the water and the shots that he requires you to hit, you know, we've been to the Landing. We've been to a few Oconee for the Lingerlanger in years past. And when Mr. Nicklaus came in and redesigned it, in, I guess it was 18 to 19, you know, there was no question from the coaches and the players. They wanted to go back to Great Waters. And when you talk about our community, you know, still the majority of all of our play is our membership that are here and that are just fantastic to be able to work with and work for. But that, you know, 10 to 12% of our overall play from the resort side, they're asking for Great Waters. If Great Waters isn't available, they'll choose to go somewhere else, which I think speaks volumes asked what Mr. Nicholas created and what we continue to put together for players to go over and enjoy great waters.
Does the golf course play drastically differently for these collegiate players than it does maybe year round for just the random resort guest that comes through? I mean, obviously it depends on the time of year and conditions. Yeah. I understand that, but are they getting any different of a look than you might see maybe a week after or 3 weeks after?
Look, no. One of the things Mr. Nicholas wanted to do when he came here was to put as much length to the golf course as he possibly could.
Sure.
He understood what the modern game was. But no, I mean, it's not as if we grow the rough up or we get the green speeds to new speeds or tests. No, I think it's the golf course that our everyday members get to play 365, as well as anyone who's coming in to experience Reynolds as a first time or a multi-time visitor. There's just some different tweaks, and obviously it's just a great tournament with some unbelievable collegiate players.
Well, you mentioned that you were there since the inception, and you've seen players come and go. You've seen great collegiate players go to the PGA Tour. You've seen Koepka and Fowler, and the list goes on and on. Chris Kirk and Hudson Swafford, a lot of Georgia guys rolling through Lingerland.
A lot of Georgia guys.
No surprise there. I know this, I'm putting you in a bad spot here, but does one kind of, it's my podcast. I do these things. What is there a player that jumps out to you that made a real big impression on you when they came through and played the Linger longer? And I don't necessarily mean their style of play, but just someone that really stuck out there. Like, I want to keep my eye on that kid for a while.
Wow. That's a great question. I mean, seems like every year someone's coming through and you're going, okay, they don't hit the golf ball like every average person, or even when I thought I could play. Sargent from Georgia, he was the one that, whether it was on the range or hitting shots or on the putting green or wherever he was, he had some wild swings in some of our tournaments, from shooting extremely low rounds to higher rounds than I think he anticipated. But he was, most recently, that's the one that just, when you asked me the question, jumped to mind. You could just see that it wasn't the same. It just didn't seem familiar watching someone hit a ball like that.
Well, Wes, I'm super excited to get down to Lake Oconee. It's really a highlight of my calendar year as far as covering collegiate events. And yeah, we have a fantastic field again. Georgia's coming in, and Georgia Tech has, Krista Lamprecht, number 2 ranked amateur in the world. Bama and hosts Mercer, Kennesaw State, and Georgia. Can't thank them enough for what they do, and you and your entire team. So thrilled to be down there once again. Leave the light on for me. I'm coming down, and can't wait to see you.
I look forward to it. We'll see you very soon.
Thank you, Wes, for the time and all the hospitality that you've shown me and everyone involved with the Linger Longer over the years. As promised, let's welcome in the head coach of the Kennesaw State University men's golf program, one of the hosts of this year's Linger Longer, to the back of the range. Coach Odom, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the talk.
Of course. Yeah. Well, we're right in the thick of it here in the spring season. I just got back from Cabo Collegiate. Yes, that's a big flex. I have no shame in mentioning that to my listeners and you. And I don't think I'm going to be having any tacos or brisket anytime soon, but great experience there. We're getting ready to get over to the Linger Longer Invitational at Reynolds Lake Oconee. We're talking maybe a week before. So like I said, right in the thick of the spring season of college golf. Give me the temperature right now about at Kennesaw State. How's the team looking right now?
The team's looking really good. We're healthy. We're
always key. Always key.
Yeah. Especially this time of year, you get guys coming back from Christmas break, and they come back, and you might have some days at the indoor on the turf, and getting their reps back in. And it's just that time of year when some wear and tear starts showing up. And right now we're in a good spot. We're actually had a guy out for most of the fall that's healthy this spring. So that's what we're gonna ride right now.
Nothing like adding a new player to the mix in the spring to make the qualifying process just that much easier, right?
That's it. It's, yeah, keep them competitive. Keep them on their toes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're going to get into it. I know you had a great fall. You had 3 wins in the fall. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what's your final push for a conference championship, mm-hmm. and getting to regionals and all that fun stuff. But yeah, we're getting ready to head into Linger Longer. We'll talk a little bit about it throughout this episode, but this is a really special tournament. I kind of feel like, you know, obviously there's no relation geographically to Cabo, but I feel like it's kind of the last, I think it's probably your last 3-day tournament. A lot of teams, it's kind of the last one where you can actually breathe a little bit. And during the tournament, you're not rushing to play a 36-hole 18, 2-day, you know, bang, bang, get on the plane, let's go home kind of a deal. I feel like,
imagine
this,
that.
Yeah, right. I know. Isn't it nice where you can play just 18 holes in one day? I feel like this is kind of the last chill tournament that most teams will see before getting started. Is that kind of your vibe there at Linger Longer?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we want it to be a super laid back event with, obviously, the venue's incredible at Great Waters and, you know, right on Lake Oconee, and private housing for the teams and coaches. And, you know, it's not a mad dash to play golf every day. It's,
right.
Teams come a day early. I mean, some visit over their spring break. I mean, we're going and playing next Thursday and Friday before the practice round on Saturday. So it's like everybody, it's the crown jewel of our season.
Sure.
And I think even some of the bigger programs are not afraid to recognize it as one of their best events too. But I think we've got a great vibe there, and we're excited to show it off year after year.
Yeah, it's actually cool. It's 3 teams host the event. It's yourself, Kansas State, and Painter, Jason Payne over at Mercer, and then the big guy, Hacker at Georgia,
the big guy.
Oh, yeah. That guy. Now, I just had him on the podcast a few weeks ago. We recorded the episode before Georgia headed down to Puerto Rico, and they won in Puerto Rico. And then recording this episode before the Linger Longer, so I would like to, you know, be recognized should Kennesaw State win the Linger Longer. Clearly, I'm going to need to change my phone number because coaches are going to start blowing me up. I mean, we're going to have to, we're going to have to get some sort of a pecking order set in. I mentioned the big guy. Let's talk a little bit about Georgia. You're starting the game, Cartersville, Georgia.
That's right.
That's Georgia's museum city. Did you know that?
I actually did know that.
See,
it's weird is because there it's, you know, it's in such a nice location. It's right off the interstate. So you can get to Atlanta and, you know, 40 minutes and get to Chattanooga in an hour. And I don't know how it became a museum city, but I mean, we've got off the top of the head, you know, I grew up there, obviously, and there was a rock and mineral museum. It was called the Weinman Mineral Museum. And Weinman was his name. And he was also the name of our high school football stadium.
Okay.
So it must have been a, you know, maybe somebody that founded the city years ago or whatever. But there's that actually turned into the Tellus Museum, TELLUS. Mm-hmm. You know, and they got dinosaurs in there. They've got moon rocks. I mean, it's like, it's pretty cool.
I feel like every kid that grew up in Cartersville just, I mean, field trips must have been just at a plenty. I mean, there's just no way you can be in that town and not just have field trips left and right.
Yeah, so you're going, you're going to the Tellus Museum. You got the Booth Western Art Museum, which has got priceless art in there. And I've actually never been in it, but and now in the past about 3 years, they've the Savoy Auto Car Museum, and they'll have rotating exhibits. And I mean, it's really weird, you know, to have such a nice little small town like that and have these cool things to do.
Well, hey, I mean, better than not having it, I'm sure.
I mean,
pretty cool growing up and having these museums and all these fun things. How'd you get into golf?
So my dad was always a golfer. My granddad, but I guess just playing with my dad when I was young and watching him play, and he was. he was never a competitive golfer, but he was a scratch golfer. He was a tremendous athlete in high school, baseball and football player, and he just always played golf. And I, you know, I guess I got my first set of plastic clubs when I was 3 or 4, and just loved it, and got more serious about it, I guess, in middle school. Kind of chose golf over baseball after, you know, Little League, and just kind of went from there. I had my first competition when I was probably 12 or 13 and got into the Atlanta Junior Golf. And
Wow. You're really a product of Hacker, aren't you? I mean, he was a founder. I mean, he turned that Atlanta Golf Association and kind of morphed into the, to what people know now as the AJGA.
Sure.
And then, so I'm guessing, so when did you first, like, this is not going to be an episode all about you and Hacker, don't worry. But that's like, right. But when did you first meet him?
It wasn't until, I guess, I visited in the fall of 96, like right after he got the job.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't play a lot of the national stuff. I was a little bit of a late bloomer, I guess, to the national scene. But I played a ton of the Atlanta Junior stuff, and I don't think the SJGT was around then. So it was Atlanta Junior Golf. And then I played an HAG event at Pine Isle, which was over on Lake Lanier. And I didn't know it at the time, but it was like a major.
Okay.
And I played in it and finished fifth. And they're like, by the way, you just got exempt into the Rolex in Arizona. I'm like, I've never been on an airplane. So here we go. It's like, yeah. So that was like the spring of 96. You know, I played really well in that event, got some exposure and had the ability to travel and play a couple more of these events. Where, you know, I went to Arizona and played. And then I think it also got me into the Thanksgiving Rolex.
Yeah. That's the one down in Florida. Is it? Well, I don't think they do it anymore, but I think that's probably right. What it was.
And I don't know if I'd signed before or after. I guess I signed right before that with Georgia, but Hacker came down and watched. And so that might have been the first time I actually really met him, is around signing or right after that.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, now the way junior golf is, it's all about, I mean, gosh, I'm seeing agents follow 14 and 15 year olds, and everyone's got to play this schedule and that schedule and exemptions. And you just basically by accident, just not knowing what you were getting into, you just wanted to play, it sounds like, in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then you just two or three things go your way, and you're in front of the best coaches in the country.
Yeah, and I can honestly say that if it was now, like if I'm 16, 17 now, and that was my skill level now, I don't think I would have had the opportunity to play in Georgia. It's just so different now with how recruiting is in the national scene. And I mean, I was a late bloomer and played mostly locally, and you know, so I look back and I'm thinking, wow, it just worked out the way it was. But I don't know that I've at that time, I would have been caliber for that big program now, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's so hard because everything is so tied to results and rankings. And the other thing, these tournaments are so, it's so difficult to get into some of these tournaments. I mean,
yeah.
It's just really, really hard.
I was actually talking to a recruit the other day, and he was trying to get into a qualifier for a big event. And he was telling me about the qualifying pecking order.
Yeah.
And he's got so many stars and he shouldn't have any issue getting in most events, but he couldn't get into this qualifier. I'm like, I had no idea. It was like that.
Yeah. it's getting to be very difficult and very challenging for players to just find a place to play. Especially unlike the amateur side. I mean, gosh, the summer tournaments fill up. So, I mean, they're so selective. But thankfully, we have a ranking system that's flawless. Well, sorry.
That's another podcast, right?
That's I am going to
a full season.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm probably going to, we're going to talk very, very briefly about rankings.
Sure.
But we're not going to get, we're not going down a rabbit hole because As most people know, there's been a little bit of a, gosh, I can't even believe I said a little bit. There's been a major kind of a upheaval of the college golf ranking system this year that they're still working on. We'll just put it that way. But sure. We'll get to that a little bit later. Don't rush. I'm going to bury the lead for a little bit because, that's going to be a conversation. But you had a great career at Georgia. I mean, four-year letter winner. Winner of the SEC championship in 2001, and they're on that 99 national championship team. This is kind of the time of year, as we said, where every team in college golf is trying to gear up for that postseason run. They're trying to find their lineup. They're trying to kind of gel. Do you remember maybe how close that team was in 99 before heading to nationals?
Yeah, I mean, it was a super competitive team. We had Hack's first couple of years, we had like 15 kids on the team. Because he inherited some,
right?
It was a mishmash of new players that he brought in, and some guys that were still in fraternities, which he immediately banned. That was his rule number one going forward. But I was actually a red shirt that year, I was around all of it. It was just super competitive, and we won the SEC the year before, but we didn't win it in the spring of 99. So I think there was that hunger there that, we got something to prove. And obviously you got Ryuji Yamada, Jeremy Parrott, who not many people know of, but he was a two-time All-American. Mark Knorr, the great junior and college player, Michael Morrison, and Nick Cassini, who became the number one amateur in the world in a Walker Cupper.
Yep.
So this team was extremely stacked. I mean, it was impossible to get in the lineup for a kid that was still myself. I was still trying to develop, but I learned so much from being on that team and even not traveling that when it became my time, I was ready. So I hung my hat on practicing with Nick and Ryuji and those guys. But, what Hacker does so well is he gives it such a competitive environment in the sense that, here's this opportunity, what we have here. And you got all these great players. And if you're beating each other, you're going to beat the people on the road.
Yeah.
Basically, if you got thoroughbreds, you let them run. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's had for most of his career there.
Yeah, he has a coaching philosophy that, and when I spoke to him, and it's actually stuff I've seen, I saw a lot of it, I've seen him at last two Linger Longers. That's kind of, I know I see him there. I'm sure there are other tournaments where I've bumped into him, but I've mentioned to him, and it kind of correlates with you. You get into your coaching career, and, this was your coach, and I look at him and I see a little bit more of a laid back coaching style where it's almost like I feel that he is kind of wanting the players to figure it out on their own because when pressure comes during the tournament, they can only rely on themselves. Coach Hack, you can't hit shots for your players. He can't hit shots for his players. So, is that kind of your philosophy, or how did you maybe kind of form your coaching philosophy when you started your coaching career?
It was definitely a lot of, I learned from Hacker about, running a program with trying to qualify as much as possible, creating a competitive environment where guys are, there's always something on the line, whether it's at practice or you're going out to play a nine-hole scramble. Yesterday we did a nine-hole worst ball scramble, and the guys were so excited to do it. They were chirping about the one we did in the fall where the losing team from the fall, they wanted revenge and they wanted to be paired together. Otherwise it was a ChatGPT pairing,
Okay.
So we didn't rig anything, but it's so fun. They're out there and they're just chirping and somebody hit one out of bounds and they're like, do we both hit provisionals or do we just hit one? It's like, just little fun stuff like that. And the losing teams, they're doing like bike sprints tomorrow morning. They decided on that.
Okay.
On their own, So much from, it. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like, I love to give ownership to the players in practice and qualifying and kind of some formats. But at the same time, it's like, you know, we kind of clean up the overall format of it. But if they all have a little bit of ownership in some of it, you know, it just creates that buy-in and that sense of pride. And, but yeah, so much from Hacker about he runs a program. And then there's things that I wanted to do different. You know, I try to be more involved in certain aspects of their game, just different ways to do things. But yeah, I mean, learned so much from Hack and Doug and still talk to him about how they do things.
No, it's I like the coaching fraternity. It seems like first of all, everyone is, other than Hack, actually, everyone seems to have bounced around a little bit. I mean, I still can't believe that that's his first and only college golf coaching job. It's just, it's amazing. Before you start your coaching career, I can't get past this. I never hesitate to ask questions when someone has professional experience on on the Hooters Tour.
Sure.
And I, you know, played, professionally for a while, played, about 30, Korn Ferry Tour events at the time. It was called Nationwide, but you are a winner on the Hooters Tour. And I know that I kind of go, anytime anyone I talk to on this podcast has Hooters Tour experience, I always like, all right, we got to get some Hooters Tour stories because they're always good. So I'm going to give you the floor. Can you give me a good story from your days on the Hooters Tour? One that is purely describes what that tour was all about.
I think I got a pretty good one.
Perfect.
Well, I was out there with Cassini a lot, Bubba, David Miller, who passed away. He was my roommate for 4 years. He passed away in 2015. But so still a lot of college guys run together. And then you got journeymen. Guys that are mid 40s that were still out there. But when I think of the Hooters Tour, a lot of times I go back to Chris Patton.
Remember Chris Patton? Yeah, of course. Yeah. U.S. amateur champion in 89, I believe.
Yeah. And I mean, just an incredible golfer, just one of the coolest, most laid back guys you'll ever meet on the golf course. But played a lot with him. And what Chris would love to do is he would love to go bowling. He would go bowling two or three nights a week at the Hooters Tour.
Okay.
And he'd probably drink a pitcher or two as well.
Of course.
His girlfriend would always caddy for him. And I mean, mid round, they're walking down the fairway, holding hands and borderline making out. And it's just like, this guy, I mean, he was still winning tournaments too. And here's a good one is, Dave Schreier.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that name.
He's at Huntington.
Yeah.
Another incredible golfer. And this guy was so intense. And everybody liked him for that because he was such a good golfer, but he was starting tournaments 62, 63, about every week, it seemed like. And we were just like, this guy, he's going to shoot 59. He's going to shoot 59. Sure enough, he shot 59 out there. And it's like, there you go. It's like, just so little stories like that. I remember of incredibly talented golfers, but it's also at the same time, you guys that are just goofing off. And,
I had someone on the podcast a while ago and I can't remember who it was. But something about parking a car in a tee box, just a lot of stuff like that. Just a lot of like, six guys to a hotel room, eating Waffle House every night and just out there. Just, yeah, it's gosh, I really wish there's,
yeah, a, it was,
I wish there was,
it was a
tour
a
like
big
that.
Dinner. It was a big dinner to go out Outback,
Right, right.
We're going to splurge tonight. We're going to go Outback. But it was a lot of Subway.
And playing in pizza. And playing in towns that have, that's pretty much all they have.
Oh, man.
What's the worst one you can remember?
Well, I never went to the tournament, and I believe it was Broken Arrow, Arizona. Never went to that one, but I heard stories. Cassini told me once where he, I think he went to this tournament and we tried to do some housing some too there, you know. It's like you could run into some of these tournaments that you could get private housing. And he told me he basically stayed with this guy that was in his trailer, and the guy was just chain smoking, and it was just awful.
Yeah. Private housing today for these college golfers is slightly different than what private housing was in the Hooters Tour.
It is. I mean, we take what we could get back then.
Yeah. I wish there was a Hooters Tour still around. It seems like,
it was super competitive. It was four rounds of golf. You were wearing pants, you know, so it was like, all right, it was legit. There was pro-ams.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot with the Hooters Tour, and my philosophy was financially try to break even during the season.
Right.
But to be prepared for Q school.
Yeah.
And I think from that standpoint, it served me well, because I played really well at first stage, and I only got through second stage once, but it was like, you know, I was always playing going into Q school. And I think that's what a lot of young players get wrong now, is they're just going Monday. And it's like, go play somewhere.
Yeah.
Go find a regular schedule and play and be ready for Q school.
Well, not only does it prepare you for Q school, but I've been talking, you know, a lot of these guys that, you know, they'll go play. I think that's what's so great about like the Elite Amateur Golf Series in the summer. I think they have to learn how to not just play, you know, they know how to play. I think they need to get out there and learn what it means to be a professional and traveling week after week after week and managing your bills and other responsibilities. And I think that's a lot to it as well. I think that's, you know, you're right. Mondays can give you a quick little glimpse of playing in a Korn Ferry event or a PGA Tour event, but it's not really teaching you what it means to be a professional golfer, that this is your job.
Right.
So
yeah, there's a certain aspect of that, doing things on your own, that it's difficult to play golf and manage everything else. And that's part of that learning curve that a lot of people miss.
Yeah, it's like Jackson Van Paris and David Ford are playing in this week's Puerto Rico Open and the Arnold Palmer, and that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they're coming back to school after that tournament, but but yeah, it's definitely a ride. Do you think it's more challenging now for the players to make that jump to professional golf, or do you think it was harder back when you were doing it?
Well, there's more money involved in it now. So, you know, there's more places to play. The Hooters Tour was kind of it was the best of the developmental tours. And I'm so out of touch with it now. I know what the best mini tours are, you know, obviously below Korn Ferry is, you got Latin American Tour and stuff like that. But you know, the domestic stuff, I don't really know. So I think there may have been some better organized tours then, as far as, you know, the competition and 4-day events and the travel. But I feel like kids jump into it a little quicker now than they used to.
Yeah, 100%. So you start your coaching career after playing professionally, you get into coaching, and you know, you would think that, you know, you kind of start off in your comfort zone around Athens, Georgia with Hacker, but but no, you kind of go the complete opposite direction. You go to Wisconsin, Big Ten, cold weather. I mean, we're talking about cold weather that we've had the linger longer the last couple of years, but Wisconsin must have been just an absolute, like, just hit in the face, like, what is this?
Yeah, it was. I did not want to go on that interview.
That's funny.
I told my wife, we didn't have our daughter at the time, and I'm literally getting ready to go on this interview, and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. To back it up a little bit, though, I was the grad assistant for Hacker and Dunn for 2 years.
Right.
So I played my professional golf, and I worked down at Sea Island a couple years, and I was like, gave it one more run in 2008 and didn't get to Q school. And I was like, I'm done. And my wife was like, well, what about coaching? She was the one that was always kind of pushing me towards different avenues. And she said, you know, I think you really enjoy coaching. You're going to still be around golf and you've got a unique skill set and experience. And I was like, you know, I think you're right. And I was like, but I want to do it the right way.
Sure.
I wanted to go back to grad school and I wanted to start at UGA. I was like, I'm going to go back and do a sports management program in Athens and work for Hacker and Doug. And then I'm going to find a program. And it all worked out. And a lot of it was, you know, behind the scenes that Hack helped me create the position, but you know, I went up and interviewed, with the professors and told them my plan and got myself admitted. Just, I wanted to make sure it was going to work, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, so fast forward to the last semester in grad school, the Stadium Classic was in Athens then at UGA for a couple of years, the Nationwide event. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of my internship to work that. And that was a lot of fun. And then it was time to start looking at coaching opportunities. And there were a few going on at the time. I remember Michael Burson left South Carolina. So I talked to Bill McDonald about South Carolina. And I remember talking to Bryce Waller at UCF and Brian Craig at Kentucky. And then I think it was Bill McDonald is like, talk to Burson about going to Wisconsin. I was like, okay, this might be where I'm pointing, you know. I went on the interview in Madison and fell in love with it. And I called my wife like, you know, the night after the interview and after seeing everything, I was like, I think I like this. It's like a complete 180. For two people that have never lived outside of Georgia.
Right.
We went to school in Georgia and it's like, hey, we're young and we're able to do this. So let's do it. And I mean, incredible experience with the university there and the Big Ten and starting my coaching career. So I don't regret any of that. But the opportunity to get back south was opening up and I started to look at that.
You mentioned your wife, Abby's played UGA. So you're both,
she did.
Yeah, both played college golf. How much of an asset? I mean, gosh, I mean, you pretty much just answered the question by saying that your wife kind of mentioned, hey, what about golf? So, I mean, that kind of is the answer, but you know, most, you know, whether you're a player, a caddy, coach, or, you know, the better half, shall we say, may not know a lot about golf. And, but, you know, obviously your wife does,
she gets it.
Yeah,
she
exactly. Totally like, what's it like to have a spouse that really, you know, not just understands what a birdie and a bogey is. I'm not talking about that. Mm-hmm, she right. really understands what she understands everything. How much of an asset has that been for you just to have the support at home that is not just, oh, well, you hope you had a nice tournament and you tried. I mean, it's not, you know, you could actually really, you know, kind of vent and unload and really kind of talk to someone that understands
it. Yeah. She's incredible in her own right. Incredible mom and wife and the teacher. And funny enough, she was a freshman when I was a fifth year. And of course I said I would never date a female golfer, but I started dating her right before I graduated and the rest is history. But, yeah, she gets it. It's like she knows what golf has meant to me, and she knows how my career is different than hers in teaching, and she knows when I've had a bad day. I mean, she can look at the scores and know if I've had a bad day.
that's actually true. There's no reason to call you. She just pulls up Golfstat or one of the seven other places we can find live scoring this year. Sorry,
or I'll. I don't follow scores a lot when I'm at the tournaments. I'm just coaching, and or I'll get a text like, wow, guys are doing great. Or I'll get one that said, is it windy today?
I'm oh, like, that's so bad. Oh my God. That's so funny. So they punched.
Is it playing tough? It's like,
wow. That's low key. Like, oh, okay. You guys are kind of, guys are kind of shit in the bed. Did a monsoon hit the golf course? And, did a tree fall down on the eighth hole or that's not good.
or yeah, or are you walking with so and so? And I'll be like, oh, no, what is he doing?
that's amazing. Like,
yeah,
yeah. So is someone sick? Yeah, that's yeah. Wow, that's funny. So you know, if you're getting those texts, it's like you really don't even need the golf stat. You just get the random text from your wife, and you know,
there you go.
Oh no. So maybe there are times you don't want your wife to know a lot about golf.
Yeah, she's incredible though.
That's funny. Well, before getting to Kennesaw State, you had one stop in between Wisconsin, and it's Western Carolina. And by the way, just did some research and looking where that university is located. So I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this. Is it Cullowhee, North Carolina?
No, that's right.
I'm doing better at this.
That's The Wee.
I'm sorry. It's the Wee. Man, I've been butchering names for a while lately. I'm getting called on the carpet for it. So you get down there, get into a little bit of warmer weather, but man, I'm looking at some of these tracks that they're able to play. Sequoia National, Balsam Mountain Preserve. It looks like it's literally out of like some golf course architecture magazine or like, you know, a golf vacation package. It looks gorgeous up there. Those kids are spoiled up there.
There's some really cool golf courses up there. And I mean, they're all scenic views.
Yeah.
A lot of bent grass golf courses in the South. So that's unique.
Sure.
Because the elevation's just enough. Yeah, it was a really good experience there. And I went from being the assistant at Wisconsin to being the head coach at Western Carolina with no assistant, no help whatsoever. So it's like,
good luck.
All right, buddy. but Coach Burson at Wisconsin gave me, you know, a lot of support and freedom in doing my role there. So I did a lot of the travel. I did a lot of the practice schedule. And, you know, so I'd had that experience, and now it was just time to do it on my own. But it was a fun place to live, and it was super laid back area. And I mean, I lived a mile from campus. It's like, how often are you ever going to get that close to living at your work for what we do? And, it's a unique school. I mean, it's a beautiful place right in the little valley, and you have to be going there to get there, kind of. Asheville is an hour up the road, so we played some golf there and hung out there a little bit. But and then my daughter was born there, so a lot of great memories there in Western Carolina.
You had a player come out of that school that, when I mention this name, people listening are going to immediately recognize JT Poston, who would win six times at Western Carolina, and he won two consecutive Southern Conference titles. And he gets to the national championship in 2015 as an individual. And, you know, I bring that up, like I said, two-time PGA Tour winner. I bring that up because, you know, right now it seems that, you know, there's that feeling in college golf where it's all about the big, big programs and PGA Tour U and you know, getting sponsors exemptions. And that, you know, some may think that's the only way you can get to the PGA Tour, and it's not. There's so many great stories, just like JT, of you can find success. How important is JT Poston to not just what happened at Western Carolina, but actually as you transition to Kennesaw State? I mean, this is kind of the blueprint of what you want these guys to kind of follow, any mid-major to follow.
Yeah. I mean, he's such an incredible golfer and friend and person in general. And I think what he does so well is he was always so competitive, and he'll tell you, if you ask him, is he got snubbed by a couple of bigger schools, and he got the opportunity to play at Western Carolina, and he went there and he made the best of it, obviously, but he was just competitive, and he was a sponge, and he's as humble today as he was as a 20-year-old kid when I first met him.
Did you see it out of him early on that, hey, this kid's got a shot? Or because, I mean, you have experience playing professionally. You know, you mm-hmm. on paper, maybe you're thinking, okay, some kid out of Western Carolina, you know, where's Western Carolina? You know, does this guy? I mean, did you see it out of him? Were there signs that are like, okay, I know he's competitive, but there's a lot of competitive guys out there. But what did you see out of him that maybe led you to think like, hey, this guy might have a shot?
Let me go back to just a little bit when I was starting to interview and look into that job. The AD at the time was pitching. He's like, look, you got this kid here, JT Poston, and he's really good. He needs somebody to lead him. He needs somebody to help him out a little bit here and there. And I'd seen his name, but I was like, okay, you know, and unfortunately, like a lot of people do, they see a big name at a small school and they're like, maybe he's not playing that big of tournaments or they just don't hear about them. Right.
Sure. They
don't get the exposure. But then right as I took the job, he qualified for the USAM that summer. I was like, okay, that's a big step for this guy. So that gave him some confidence. And I think that same summer he won like the Southwestern AM out in Arizona. So he was doing some stuff. He was like getting out of his shell a little bit. So that was a bit of a selling point for that job, is to come in and be involved in helping JT make the next steps, you know, trying to see where we could get him. And he was a sponge. I mean, and he was a great teammate. He was competitive. And like what I remember about him, and I still tell this story to my guys now, it's like he was exempting himself into the next event by how he played, but yet he would still put everything into qualifiers and win the qualifiers. It's like he didn't let up. He never let up.
Yeah, that's something that's very important.
So yeah, it was just that personal drive he had. And then, you know, a few events I remember playing with Joe Inman. When he was still at Georgia State. You know, Joe was an old tour player, and he had that eye for talent. And I remember he pulled me aside a few times. He's like, all right, Brian, I've seen this kid scores. Does he really have it? And I'm like, I think he does, Joe. Just watch. He's like, oh, he doesn't hit it that far. And I was like, watch him on the greens, buddy. Yeah. And just the demeanor he has on the golf course. You know, he's got something in him that makes him as good as he is. It's just that inner edge and that competitiveness and that humbleness. And at the time I used to tell JT he was a lot like Harris English, you know, that demeanor on the course and that smooth tempo and just kind of how way he went about things. And he really liked that because, you know, Harris had just got the tour at the time. And so it gave him somebody to look up to at the time. And, you know, now he's out there playing with Harris all the time.
It sounds like he's a guy that actually was well equipped to be a professional, not just, you know, it doesn't seem like a guy that's just going to go and I'm just going to hit as far as I can and try and, you know, hopefully things are going to click 1 week. It sounds like he actually has the pedigree to be a long time professional that knows how to plan his way around golf courses, knows how mm-hmm. to do the job, so to speak. So, and that's kind of what you're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, he knew his length was never going to win him golf tournaments.
Right.
And, I mean, he's longer now than he was then, but he's still not super long on tour by any means. But he's done everything right that he's needed to do to make himself better. He surrounded himself with the right people. And, I remember Jeremy Elliott calling me a few times, I guess JT's senior year, because JT was starting to think about where am I going to go? Where am I going to live? And I was like, dude, you got to look into Sea Island.
Yeah.
And I talked to Jeremy Elliott a few times, and Jeremy straight up said, he's like, does this kid have it? What, you know, what has he got? And I'm like, well, he's just one of the best kids you'll ever meet, and he's going to work his tail off. And I think the more – I've told this a lot of times. It's like when JT gets into an environment and he feels comfortable, that's when he makes his next step. He's like, he won his first college event like the first event at Western Carolina for me, he won his first college event. And so he started believing. Then he won like three more times that year. And then he got out of college and he almost won a nationwide event. And he's like, then he took off there. And then, I mean, he didn't even have to go to Q school.
Yeah.
He's one of the few guys that didn't go to Q school at all. And then when he got on the tour and he got, you know, playing well and got more comfortable, he took off. So it's like, he just needs that little extra belief or comfort where he was over the years, where he was playing. And then it's like, boom, he's gone.
Yep.
And now he's comfortably in the top 50 in the world.
Yeah, that's, and that's incredibly impressive. And yeah, you know, when you won a John Deere, which is a birdie fest, and that's doubly impressive too.
So yeah, I mean, I think it was last year he, I don't know if he made cut in all four majors, but he made the cut in, I think, three of them. And so just little steps like that, I think that might have been the first year, maybe the second, that he got into all four majors. Because it's hard to do, you know, even winning a tournament doesn't get you in all the majors. Just a little more exposure like that to the big events, and now he's in these elevated events. And no, I mean, I think people are not surprised by that, know him through the years, are not surprised by what he's doing. But he's not flashy. He's not gonna overpower any golf courses. He's not gonna show a lot of emotion out there, but he just gets it done.
Yeah, he made the cut in three out of the four majors. The only one he didn't make the cut in was the U.S. Open, but T34 in the Masters, and T40 at PGA Championship, and a T41 in the Open Championship. So,
and I want to say in like the final round of the Masters, I mean, I think he shot like 300, may have been like bogey free either there or final round the PGA. Like little things like that is like, shows you a level of comfort, you know, when you're shooting a good round or a bogey free round in a big event like that.
His best rounds in the Masters and the PGA Championship were the final round.
Yeah.
Grinder. Guess that's what you call him. Call him a grinder.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get you out of here in a few minutes, but I want to talk about Kennesaw State and what you're doing. You know, you take over that job in 2015. What's harder? Take over a slumping program that you're expected to turn around quickly, or take over a successful program where they're looking at you to continue at a high level?
I mean, I walked in some big shoes. Jay Mosley did an incredible job here, you know, and now he's at Ohio State doing a super job. And it's hard to maintain a level of expectation at a mid-major when, for lack of better phrase, we don't have everything that some of the other big schools do.
Sure.
It's like you can reach a certain ranking or a certain peak in your in your play and these schools, but it's hard to keep it there with, you know, with what recruits are looking for and what tournaments you can get in. I came in and we had some really good years, and we had some down years, right? You know, especially around COVID. I don't know if anybody can really say they had a great time before and after COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
But I feel like we're getting in a better spot now. We've done some, you branched out to a little bit more international the last couple of years, and we got some great kids out of Australia right now. And I think that's kind of what we're doing right now, is we're getting the best players we can, but we're trying to get even better kids. And you put these guys together, and they want to help each other. They want to compete. They want to get better. And that's what I feel like I got right now with this team. It's like I told one of the guys the other day, I said, this is the favorite team I've had here.
Really? Wow.
Yes. Yes.
That's saying a lot. You've had a lot of
– Just from the standpoint of good people. You know, we got really good people. We got some great golfers, and – we're getting into the meat of our schedule now. It's like, okay, let's see what we can do. But this has been such a fun year for me and my wife. And again, my wife knows that, she's like, man, this, you've really been relaxed and enjoyed this year. I was like, yeah, it's like, So that's just the ebb and flow of it. And, you know, try to take a little bit of this with us every year. And you got to enjoy the good years when you have them, because they're hard to come by sometimes.
I would imagine, you know, messaging and proper mindset is something you're always working on. I think that's probably, you know, every college golf coach can say that. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm going to delicately kind of bring up the topic of rankings. I'm sure many mm-hmm. people know Division I men's and women's golf. It's year one of a new ranking system. Fair to say that there are a few bugs that are still being worked out, but, you know, the season continues, everything keeps moving on. Do you look at the rankings with your team? How do you deal with an added amount of uncertainty this season?
I don't look at them a lot with the team. I mean, Coach Nick and I do a little bit behind the scenes, but we're not big grinders on the stats or on the rankings. I think what we preach the team is just process and keep doing what you're doing, and results take care of themselves. And, you know, they know this is the meat of our year with our strongest events, and we can make the most gains. But at the same time, it's like, we just have to do what we need to do each and every day. And if we show up with our best squad, like I felt like, I mean, obviously we won three times in the fall. We did that with three different lineups.
Yeah.
And then in Puerto Rico, we contended, and I mean, we ran with Arkansas for three rounds. I feel like that team right there, we had it. Puerto Rico is a top 50 team.
Sure.
So if we channel that for these next three or four events, it's like, we know what we're capable of. And with the rankings, I like a lot of the, I guess it's still as transparent as, more transparent than it used to be in the past. I think seeing what, how many points that you might be able to get in the next few events and where that might take you is interesting. But I don't know. Obviously, I know these events coming up are strong, but I don't know really how many points are available, you know, if you finish in fifth or third or whatever.
Sure.
But I got an idea of, okay, if we get these amount of points in these next few events, this is where we can be. So that, I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's going to work itself out eventually. I think there's definitely mm-hmm. bugs, but again, it's important. Sounds like it's important for you guys just to kind of, like you said, kind of keep your head down, do what you got to do. And actually, with college golf, you know, rankings kind of go out the window when it comes time to advancing through to regionals. And, you know, you've been to regionals three times, got through in 2016, 17, I believe. And, you know, for those that may not know or just need a refresher in the way college golf works, you can have the greatest regular season of all time. And it doesn't matter if you're Kennesaw State or Texas or Harvard, North Carolina, doesn't matter. Everyone has to go to regionals in order to get to the national championship.
Right.
Is there anything like regionals anywhere in college golf? I mean, it's just on an island of its own, isn't it?
It really is. And it's it can only help the teams on the bubble, and it can only hurt the good teams, right?
Right.
You know, so for a team like us, if we get to regionals, that's amazing. And then we've got nothing to lose.
I kind of feel like that's the best place to be when it comes to regionals. Like I've been to one regional. I was at PGA National down here by me in South Florida. I went one time. I was like, yeah, I'll run up to, you know, bring a camera, run up to regionals. I'm like, oh, I'm never coming to this ever again. Everyone's stressed. Players, coaches, it's just, right. I'm like, I do not need to be here. Like,
it's not the linger longer.
Oh my God, it's terrible. I mean, it's just, there really is nothing to win, really. I mean, I guess for rankings and individuals winning, okay, but it's really like, all right, we're either moving on or that's the end of the season. So I kind of feel like, yeah, you want to be a team that's going there with like, look, we got nothing to lose. We're overachieving. We didn't know if we were going to be here or not, but we're here and we have a chance, but let's just lay it all out there and see what happens. I think that's got to be the best way to go through it.
I agree. I think that's, you know, that's where a lot of mid-majors are. It's like, it's where a lot of, if you just look at the top 100, maybe towards the end of the year, it's less and less mid-majors in the top 100 and even in the top 60.
Right.
So anytime a mid-major gets to a regional, it's like, it's a great year. I don't care what anybody else says. It's a great year because we're limited at our facilities, our budgets, our ability to get in all the best tournaments. And like, you know, if we get to regionals, it's a heck of a year. And then our guys are, they're going to play their tail off because they're like, just nothing to lose. It's like, yeah, but it's a pressure cooker.
That's the one where you are getting a lot of texts from your wife, and that's a pressure one. Well, let me get you out of here. I know we got Linger Longer coming up. I appreciate the time. I know that we're looking forward to Linger Longer. It's always a great time out there. Super strong field and just a lot of hospitality there at Great Waters. But go get your guys ready. I'll see you in a few days up there at Lake Oconee, and I appreciate you stopping by the back of the range.
Yeah, Ben, always appreciate what you do for college golf and exposing, you know, the great experience that we have as coaches and players, and look forward to having you at the Linger Longer.
And there you have it. Special thanks to Wesley Forrester from Reynolds Lake Oconee and Coach Brian Odom of Kennesaw State for their time on this episode. Don't forget, follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for all the content and all the updates in the world of college golf. We'll see you next time here at the back of the range.